Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
It's been a little while. How you doing?
It is, and I'm buried as usual.
Yeah, right.
That's what I get for trying to go away for the weekend.
Yeah, that always happens. Like, you set up, you're going to go on vacation, and then suddenly an avalanche of work just gets in your way.
I have 8 discs to try to push out the door this week. Not going to happen.
Yeah, well, you'll go through, like, 2 weeks of nothing, right?
I don't know. The nothing is starting to wane. I only had, like, less than a week this time.
Yeah, I go through periods like that myself, just with like the start of a new season, where it's two and a half weeks of absolutely nothing but work, and then I'll go through a lull, but this time there was no lull. I wasn't able to take any time off, so it's just straight into, I hope it's not straight into the summer. I'm hoping to take some time off this May, but I don't know, man.
One thing that, I guess I would have had a lull, except... that was right around the time that Discotech started to go, hey, we want to do some more Blu-rays. And I'm like, okay, great. And then I got some more indie clients, and I was just like, ooh.
Yeah, and you can't turn work down.
So, no, you can't, yeah. Because then you'll never get it again.
Right, yeah. I just have to basically say, okay, I am taking this day to this day off. Whatever happens to the publishing schedule is, I don't know, someone else's fault. But I can't do that, so I don't know.
Right.
I got to figure it out at some point.
And a lot of the Discotech stuff, it's just like stuff I would want to do anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited about some of that stuff. They've been announcing a lot of stuff.
They have. A lot of good stuff. I'm really, like, we're just putting the finishing touches on this one disc, 52 standard def episode Blu-ray. Of Samurai Pizza Cats.
Right, yeah, I think I might buy that, just because.
I mean, it still looks terrible. I mean, the only masters of that show are analog. Like, that was made on old one-inch tape. That's how old that show is.
Yeah, sure, but to me, it's more like, that's fine, because that show's never going to look better than that, and it's just one disc on a shelf. It doesn't take up, like, a huge brick.
That's true, and it is nice to just... have it all in one go in case you want to get really, really, really stoned and watch all 18 hours in a row.
Man, you'd have to be stoned for a very long time for that to happen.
That you'd have to have, like, you'd have to have furniture made of pot that you can just break off. And...
Right. I don't know about that. Depends on the weed. But anyway, frankly, if they offered, like, okay, the show only exists in standard definition... It's 98 episodes. We're going to put it all on 2 Blu-rays or 1 Blu-ray or whatever. And here you go. Like, that would be great. It would save on shelf space so much.
Yeah, and I imagine there's, you know, still some novelty value in that, too.
Yeah, sure. Also, yeah, it's like I have the entire show on this one thing.
Right.
So, I that's the ideal way for me. Because otherwise it's a big production. It's a huge clamshell. You got to pull discs out and stuff. Nah, fuck that.
Yeah, anything we can do to make watching your stuff less work is probably a good thing in the long run.
Right, yeah, and as we all move into streaming, the streaming future, taking discs out of packages and putting them into a thing is going to become too much work.
Jesus, how lazy we've become.
If it isn't already. For teenagers, I would imagine it is.
Like, well, there's already. Lots of anecdotal stories of like, yeah, I bought the disc, but it was on Netflix, so I just rather than get up and cross the room...
Well, if you have, like, a lot of discs, like, for you, you keep everything in those flight cases, right? So, like, if you want to watch something, you got to go rifle through that case.
It's an alphabetical order.
Well, still, like, it's thousands of discs, right? Or
yes.
Hundreds, thousands? So,
thousands.
Yeah, so, you know, it takes a while. If it's on Netflix and it's in HD, you know.
That's true. I did recently realize that sitcoms have no... purpose on DVD, because you don't really, you're never looking to marathon them.
Yeah.
You want to, like, pull, oh, I remember this episode, this was great, and pop that one in. And it, chances are very low that you're going to watch more than that one that's on that one disc.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there was a time when I would put those on in the background and just let them play. But sure. Now, if I want to do that, I just turn on Netflix and hit play and just tell it to keep going.
Right.
And it's not a big deal. I actually just got rid of most of my sitcoms. The only two I have left are Seinfeld and The Simpsons. That's it.
Well, those are... Well, Seinfeld just got signed to Hulu.
Yeah, right, so I might get rid of those.
Really happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Simpsons, I might have to buy the first few seasons just because I haven't seen those in... since they aired, most of them.
Well, you don't have FX... there is a streaming service for it.
Right. But you have to be a cable subscriber, which defeats the purpose. Yeah.
Well, you can use my password. That's how that works, right? That's all available, but it's not available on one of the major services yet. Once it goes to Hulu or Netflix, maybe not Netflix because those are temporary. Hulu seems like it's basically forever. So I might get rid of them. I don't know. A show where, like, that's such an enshrined part of my youth that I'm not sure I'll ever get rid of it.
Yeah, Hulu should. I mean, I probably should just knuckle down and buy that giant, really heavy Seinfeld brick.
Yeah, it's like $100.
Yeah, I should just do that because, you know, it is a part of who I am. Like, that show is still quoted within my family.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, that's how old we are.
Well, yeah, right. And I have a lot of that, and then I have a ton of Mystery Science Theater, but that's a collection. Like, those are worth money. So I keep that all together. I'm only, like, a few sets away from having almost everything that's been released. But that's, like, a collection. Like, I'll keep that together, and if I ever get rid of it, it all goes at once, you know, that kind of thing.
It's really strange because, like, this format of TV sitcoms and really all television – it was meant to be ephemera. It was meant to be, you know, you watch it once, forget it exists.
Right.
And, you know, it's really kind of a square peg in a round hole to have collections of them.
Yeah, streaming makes much more sense for it.
And anime is much easier, being 13 episodes at a chunk, for the most part.
Yeah.
But, you know, with long-running classic sitcoms, even something like Mad Men, it's hard to keep a collection.
Well, that stuff, like Mad Men and Breaking Bad, I'll just leave those on the Blu-ray shelf. Like, it's only $5 or $6 as, you know, Blu-ray-sized right. cases. It's not like this big chunk, this unwieldy thing. But, right. like, I have all those original Seinfeld boxes.
Oh, my God. That must take up so much space.
It takes up its own shelf on my...
That's like owning all the singles of the original Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a lot. It's huge. So if I could swap that for the brick, I would. But then if I'm going to do that, well, it's going to be on Hulu. I pay for Hulu. Why don't I just watch it on Hulu? Like, if I'm ever going to watch it again, I may as well just stream it. You know, I'm not.
And the Hulu ones will probably be reconfigured for HD.
Yeah, the ones I have are SD, and yeah. So I don't know. It's weird, but anime is going to be anime on that front. Anime is an even tougher sell, you know, in terms of moving completely away from physical media, if only because culturally we were sort of conditioned to value it more, right? So, like, we came from a time when this stuff was rare, hard to get, and you had to hoard it. And so getting over that idea that it's special and, like, oh, I need a physical copy of this is it's tough to pry that out of my brain, I guess.
Well, also, you know, yeah, I mean, I have that mentality. And also, I feel like it really could go away at any moment. I mean, those contracts for Hulu, they're basically at will. They right. can pull those anytime they want.
Yeah, that's true. Like, those streaming services, like, the thing is with streaming services, all you have to do if you want to see the future of that, what it's going to look like, you look at video games right now. So you had online games that had multiplayer servers, online-only games that have gone out of business or otherwise been shut down, you just can't play those games anymore unless somebody starts up a private server. Like, that, we've seen that happen. What happens to an internet-only service that's a distributor of media, when it goes away, it just goes away. You just can't play those games anymore. So
yeah, I mean, what's really terrifying, especially with a service like Hulu, Hulu's owned by the three major TV networks, three of the four major TV networks in America. If they decide, you know what, it's eating into our bottom line too much, they could pull the plug at any time.
They could, even though it's much more likely that they're going to decide that that's the future and go whole hog into that instead of deciding, you know what, traditional broadcast, that's the way to go. That's the way of the future.
Well, no, what they're trying to push instead is their own platforms. Everyone wants to own the platform.
Yeah, right. So now if I want...
And they're terrible at it.
They're terrible at it, and the grim future is, of course, you have to buy, in order to get a facsimile of what you get with cable, you have to buy so many streaming packages that it's, because I got to buy the CBS package, then I got to buy the Fox package. Then
you're not buying the CBS package.
Well, you know what I'm saying. It's an example.
Yeah, but like having to have a separate ding on your credit card every month for fucking CBS.
Yeah, right. It's like, well, I want to watch two shows on FX. So I gotta pay the $8.99 a month to just get FX. Like, like the a la carte stuff that everyone says they want. What they want is a cable bill that will only charge them for the stuff they watch, not the countless thousands of channels they don't watch.
And we have that. It's called iTunes or Amazon.
Yeah, but then you're paying piecemeal per show, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if something is on CBS, just one show that you want to watch, what are you going to do? Pay, you know, $8 a month for CBS, or are you going to pay, you know, whatever for that one show?
Right. Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. As sort of an omnivore, like I watch a lot of TV. Not really. Actually, don't watch anywhere near as much TV as I used to. But I watch a lot of stuff, and I like to have the access to new stuff I've never heard of. So like HBO will have a documentary I'd never heard of that'll just pop up on like a Monday night.
Well,
so,
sure. Yeah, but HBO is almost always worth it.
This is true.
Yeah, HBO is the, I mean, that's why they're HBO. They can curate to an insane amount and really get some interesting stuff.
Yeah, right. But in terms of, like, trying something new, like if I just want to try a new show or something, I don't really want to have to pay for it. I just want it to be, you know, I just want to get it on my DVR or whatever.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be, like, a perfect non-cable solution that's going to be the perfect thing that meets all of your needs and is the price that you want. Like, you're probably always going to get fucked by the TV industry at some point. Like, somewhere in there. Either it's not going to be everything, or it's going to be everything and a bunch of shit you don't want, and you have to pay a whole lot for it. Like, I don't know that the perfect solution's ever going
to
come.
I'm really curious to see what this over-the-top service from both Apple and Sony are going to look like.
Define over-the-top.
Over-the-top is what they call the not over-the-internet pay TV options. So both Apple and Sony through PlayStation are going to be offering subscription kind of boiled down TV bundles. And they haven't announced pricing on the Apple one yet. I forget how much the PlayStation one is, but it's like 25 to 35 bucks a month. And you get like the major, you get the 20 channels that you get when you're in a hotel.
Huh. And here I thought it was just arm wrestling. Get it? Because that movie, Over the Top. Have you ever seen, you should see that movie. It's pretty good.
I think I got it on Netflix back when it was like, you know, Netflix in an envelope.
Right, the disc service. Yeah, I know people still use that. Yeah.
I remember it being exactly what that sounds like.
Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like, which is what you want, right?
I did just really, really happily buy the Blu-ray of the two Breakin' movies.
Yeah, I didn't know that was out. I think I might need to get that.
They, I mean, it's exactly the same. You can throw away the old DVDs once you get them, but okay, they're so much fun. They're so stupid.
I gotta get Ghoulies and Ghoulies 2. That's coming out too.
Oh, there we go.
Speaking of which, have you watched anything lately? I know you were chomping down on Shirobako.
Oh yeah, I did the that show. Man, that show got me. That show got me good.
I knew it would. I told you so.
That was every itch I needed to be scratched, and it kind of helped extinguish a long period of burnout I was going through.
Yeah, it's that was one of those shows where I hadn't, like, I decided I'm not going to watch this quote unquote like for work. I'm going to watch this in my spare time because I want to save it for when I just want to be happy and entertained and not be thinking about work. I haven't done that with anything in a really long time.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's really good. We want to do a full series, like, review of it at some point. Insofar as I can tell, we have, like, 80 billion people that want to be, like, part of that, but we'll save a seat for you if you want to be.
Sure.
Come in. That one. Yeah, it's... I you know, unfortunately, it's tanking here. Like, no one watched it.
Right, yeah. It was a sleeper on the streams.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of the people that go to Crunchyroll are, you know, the kids that are there for the Naruto. They don't care about watching adults do work.
Yeah, they want to watch the Sword Art Online and their Naruto, and that's it. And that's fine. But, you know, it's funny because the hype for that show among our Twitter bubble and even, like, you know, the forums on ANN, you know, that's a very different crowd. And so something that might seem like it's the most popular thing in the world to them is not even a blip.
Oh, like, it, you go to the most popular page on Crunchyroll, it's like page two.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
in mixed in with shows from like four seasons ago.
Yeah, I just did an audit of the numbers on our daily streaming reviews, like, you know, basically the ratings, like how many people were reading, you know, what episodes, which shows were the most popular, like the most well-read, and they fall in line with viewing habits.
Oh, really?
So, like, Fate Stay Night does way better than just about everything else. Death Parade did really, really, really well for us, the reviews that I wrote. Not tooting my own horn, that was a well-liked show, so people read the reviews. Contrast that with something like Yurikuma Arashi, which was the talk of Anna Twitter, but did not do that well, I don't think, streaming, and the numbers for it were middling. Like, it was a mid-range kind of a thing.
Mm.
You know, they fall in line almost exactly with viewing patterns. So if a show is really popular and we run reviews of it, those reviews will be the most read. I guess it stands to reason, but it's less dependent on the author. So, yeah. Shirobako, those reviews did, like, less, a little lower than average, like, a little under average.
Yeah. I really, you know, it's one of those shows that, I guess, sort of like Chihayafuru, where everyone just, it's one of those shows where everyone just quietly hopes that NIS picks it up or something.
Right. Well, Sentai has Shirobako.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. So, there you go. I'm sure, though, maybe they'll put out a good set. You never know. But, you know what, here's the thing, though. I bet we're not going to get that for a while. Like, a good while.
You think so?
Have you seen the numbers it sells in Japan? It's enormous there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Tens of thousands.
Huh.
Yeah, well, that's huge hit.
Good news.
I'm glad
somebody liked it.
They underproduced it, and they had a real supply problem. So, like, it was selling out, and then the reprint would sell out.
That so warms my cold, dead heart.
Yeah, they loved it over there. I mean, yeah. Big success. We'll definitely, like, if it doesn't get another season, I'll be shocked. So, yeah.
That makes me happy.
Yeah, good news. So, yeah, anything else?
I'm working till I die.
Right, yeah, sounds like. The only thing, I have to start Fate Zero. That's actually going to be our next series discussion on the podcast. I haven't started it yet. The other thing I saw, I saw this movie Ex Machina. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Everyone's been telling me to go see it.
It's really good. I think it's really good.
All right.
I don't want to spoil anything about it because it's better if you just don't know anything. But it's, you know, it's about artificial intelligence, and I thought I was kind of bored with that, you know, the idea of, like, oh no, we've made this advanced artificial intelligence, what's going to happen? Like, I thought I was kind of bored with this, but this was a very artsy take on that, and it's a simple, just kind of stripped down, very straightforward movie that is very, very artsy fartsy. Like, I loved it for that. Like, really, really gorgeous looking, and there's, like, the guy, like, visually references Ozu, and then his whole style is biting Ozu, like, the entire time.
Wow.
Which is fun to watch, because the movie's all, Ozu movies are 4:3?
Yeah.
Like, this movie, you could pull in the margins and make it 4:3, and it would look fine.
Huh.
Like, that's how he shot it. And it's a lot of those similar techniques. A lot of the same kind of shots, you know, very meticulous right angles everywhere, and people still in the center of the frame. They're in the center of the frame all the time, you know, that kind of thing. Very super Ozu-y, but it's an arty sci-fi movie for, you know, it's not like a beep boop STEM nerd kind of a movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not obsessed with details or anything. In fact, if you start taking it apart a little bit, like, there's some plot holes and stuff, but that's not the point. Like, the point is it's supposed to be sort of an artistic representation of an event that I think is going to happen in our very near future. Like, it feels like it's barely science fiction to me. So it's very prescient, and it's really good. Just don't watch a trailer. Don't read a review. Just go. If your theater's playing it, just go check it out. You'll be better off not knowing what happens. And, I think it'll be VOD, like, pretty soon. So, yeah. I highly recommend it. I think it's a good movie.
Okay.
We're seeing in this as we head into the summertime full of tent poles and superheroes and all that.
Almost shit. None of which I'm interested in.
I gotta admit, I am super stoked to see Mad Max. I think that looks great.
Really?
Those trailers look... Have you seen the trailers? It looks awesome.
I have not, but I heard good things about it.
Yeah, it looks like... It looks like the version of that movie that you, like, that's how you wanted those movies to be.
Because they were always so janky by the time I got around to them.
Yeah. I've only ever seen the first one. I'm actually going to watch the second and third one here pretty soon before the new one comes out. But this one looks like what little kid me imagined that to be like.
Hmm.
So it looks really fun and cool. Like, I'm excited about that. And apparently Inside Out is really good.
Yeah, so I've been hearing. Thank God that wasn't as bad as you had feared it would be.
Yeah, well, those trailers, they weren't good.
No, they were hacky. They were pretty hacky.
But apparently they showed it at CinemaCon, which is exhibitors, so you don't really know, you know, whether or not that's something you take seriously or not.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't that they loved it, just that they loved it. It's that they were bawling.
Well, that, and they said, like, oh, this is real. It's so nice to see an original thing. It's not a sequel or anything like that. It's just original. So, great. You know, if we're going to get a little, like, mini renaissance.
Who knows? Maybe we buried Pixar too soon.
Maybe. They're holding back. But, I mean, it's two originals this year. Like, two non-sequels. So, and then after this, it's fucking Finding Nemo sequel, Toy Story 4. Like, so I guess we better just appreciate it.
Yeah. Take what we can get.
Toy Story 4. Come on.
Yeah, they...
Come on.
Disney is, I mean, you know, they have more money than God, and it's really working for them, just working, making all these ridiculous franchises they can just milk and milk and milk. But, God, if I'm not getting sick of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just completely disengaged on a good half of those by now. I mean, I'll go see the new Star Wars, of course, but, you know, Marvel...
Honestly, I was pretty ambivalent about Star Wars until that trailer, which it totally got me. It totally got me. I was like, whatever, Star Wars. And then I saw it and I was like, Star Wars. Like,
right?
It was really stupid. I felt dumb, but I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to embrace this. Like,
I feel like everything Star Wars that has happened during my sentient lifetime until now has been just taking a giant steaming turd. On everything. And now finally there's something that is actually okay.
That matches the first three anyway.
Yeah. Or I mean, the first three, you know, they were very much product of their time. This might reach that level by today's standards. I'm really hoping it does.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, we know for certain that the second three didn't. So maybe this time will.
Well, and the funny thing to me is that you get all these people saying like, oh, don't get too optimistic. It's like, look, we've been through this. We got, like, three of maybe the shittiest movies in a row, one after the other. Like, the shittiest movies. Those movies are terrible. The prequels. It can't be worse than that. So I'm just going to go ahead and hang on to the positive feelings and be excited for it. And who gives a shit? I'm not going to... If it's disappointing, it's yet another disappointing movie. Who cares? Like, it's not the end of the world. I just... That whole, like, oh, don't get excited for it. Like, what... Or what?
You know, I do understand that, though, because people – you remember when episode 1 through 3 came out, and especially with episode 1, people held on for so long to the delusion that those were good movies.
Yeah, they did.
they really held on to that. Like they, and like it was a years long process of letting go that allowed them to finally process. It went from these are the best movies ever made. Like there were 5-star reviews from every major critic. Like everyone fell for it.
Yeah.
And then slowly it went, okay, well they have some problems, but I enjoyed them. To, oh my God, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
To, oh God, what?
Yeah. Why did we, why? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right, but...
So I can imagine for a lot of, like, less jaded, cynical moviegoers, that was probably a traumatic event that they don't want to re-experience.
I guess my point is, I don't really see how that's damaging. Like, okay, you get excited for it, and then it turns out it's not so good. So what? That's life. Like, I don't get why...
But it's all they have to live for, Zach.
I guess. Maybe that's it. I'm just like, so what? Who cares? Like, oh no, they were too excited. Well, who does that hurt? I don't get it. It's fine. Be as excited about that shit as you want to be. I think it's going to be good. If it's not, oh gosh, I'll be wrong about something. Probably for the 8th time that day. Anyway. Let's get to some Twitter questions.
Okay.
We're a little off topic. All right. Jeff Tebbets, who has been on the show before, and today is his 40th birthday. So happy birthday, Jeff.
You are officially old.
Yeah. No. He's got like 25 years before he's like officially really old.
Are we just moving the bar because we're both like on the edge of 35?
40's middle-aged. Like, it's firmly middle-aged. Oh, man. Right?
I'm 5 years away from middle-aged.
Yeah. Well, technically, well, yeah, 35 is, like, the start of middle-age, right?
I don't, you know, everyone uses, it's middle-aged is one of those terms that everyone uses differently.
Yeah, some people think you're middle-aged until you're 70.
Yeah.
I consider 60 to be the start of your senior year.
60. Well,
65.
Let's make it 65, because then at least you're collecting Social Security.
Sure, why not make the Social Security cutoff? Yeah. See, we're old guys now. So, like, if we were, like, 23, you'd be like, oh, 30's when you're old. And now we're like, oh, no, you're not old until you're 65. I'm going to give myself another 35 years. Before
To be fair, you know, you look at people our age that, like, you know, our parents' generation, you know, the photos of them back in the 80s or something. Overall, we look a lot better than they did.
Well, okay, but you're talking about the times, though, like...
Maybe it's a fashion, but I think it's also just how we act and, you know, how we take care of ourselves. Not that we take care of ourselves wonderfully as a generation, but I don't know. It's just there's a world weariness to them that we just don't have.
Well, neither of us have had kids. Neither of us have been through the shit that our parents went through at our age at this point. Like, having kids makes you look different and act different. You're not as put together because you're busy dealing with your kids.
I don't know. I have friends with kids, though.
And they're, well, okay. All right. Are they well off? Because that makes a big difference, too.
I mean, they're not, you know, upper class or anything, or even, but they're, you know, not dying for money or anything.
I'm just saying. I don't know. I don't think you can look back and say, like, we're objectively better than these people.
Zach, I will always say that we are objectively better than baby boomers.
You're right. I forgot for a second who I was talking to. Anyway, his question is, possibly a controversial subject, so pushing it aside is fine, but is a meme such as Hestia's ribbon good for anime?
Scenario, it can't be worse than what came before.
Yeah, well, the scenario here being that anime is a thing that needs good PR, which I'm not sure I completely agree with that, but it's just a thing. People just had a lot of fun with it. I don't know. It didn't seem like... I mean, it got old, like, kind of quick.
It's a very, very simple, barely even joke.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the episode, I was like, huh, that's funny. And then it just took off. Like, I think Twitter was, like, nothing but the fucking boob string for, like, 2 days, 3 days, maybe longer than that. Man, it got old. I don't think it's bad. I don't think people are like, oh, I don't know about this anime stuff. A boob string? Well, never mind. Like, I don't think that's happening, so don't worry about it. Don't fret over
like, bustiers, that's not a new concept.
Well, the boob string in particular is...
Yeah, I get boob string, but that's just a very low rent bustier.
It just seems like it would kind of hurt. This, yeah, anyway. All right. Arsclaimer asks, weird, what discotheque acquisition has surprised you so far this year? I mean, you know about all this stuff well in advance.
Yeah.
But but when you were told about them, say, you didn't find out about them at the announcement, but when you were told about them, was there anything you were like, oh, wow?
Yes. I'm still shocked that they got Robot Carnival.
Yeah. I mean, was that
absolutely shocked?
Was that a rights thing, or was that like a nobody's ever going to pick this up because it's not?
That was a nobody was ever going to pick that up thing, and I thought it was in limbo because perhaps one of the original directors didn't like it anymore or something.
Oh, really?
But no, what it turns out happened was that the it's a little tiny animation studio that made that basically just does farm out work these days, APPP Corporation. And they did, you remember Super Techno Arts?
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
They tried to do that, and they face-planted so hard that they just kind of were shying away from the American market entirely because they didn't want to get burned again. I think they felt taken advantage of.
Oh, okay. Didn't make the money on those JoJo's OVAs that they thought they would, huh?
I think it was more than that. I think they had real trouble with distribution. They got probably... it was guys who were in over their head doing business in another land that didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they got taken. I don't know what happened specifically, but they were, they were bruised from it. And so I didn't think anyone was going to get through to those guys. Somehow Discotech did. So I hope that goes really well. I finished the video master for the DVD not long ago. It looks gorgeous. I hope everyone buys it.
Discotech seems like it's kind of doing whatever the Italians and the French are able to do, because they get like basically everything, and it's it seems like they have access to this stuff, whereas American licensors for whatever reason get shot out of it a lot or don't pursue it. He seems to be doing whatever it is they're doing to get in there and get some of these rarities, like, or stuff that just hasn't been available for a long time.
I kind of marvel at it. Yeah. I really do. I don't know how a guy like a little tiny company like that ends up with, the Street Fighter II animated movie. How does that happen?
Yeah.
How did Funimation not just, blow all sorts of money onto that?
I would imagine that what they probably did was do something like with that specifically. It's probably like, well, we looked at the sales data over time and it's basically wrung dry. Like everyone who wants that has it, but it hasn't been in print like forever.
And I'll bet there's, there were probably issues with music clearance and online.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure that's a big part of stuff that's freely available to everybody, is that their Discotech is one of the only companies that doesn't ask for online rights.
Right. Yeah. We've mentioned that before as like, that's a huge thing. So if you ever see like, oh, funny how Discotech is doing this. Like, Discotech is releasing the first season of Free on DVD. Notably, they're sublicensing that from Crunchyroll. What does Discotech not want? Streaming fees.
Yep.
So there you go. Mystery solved. I mean, I'm happy they're doing Bloodlust. That's like the one I'm looking forward to the most.
I got the master for that. I do have to temper people's expectations on that one a little bit. Because it still looks nice, but it was one of those movies. It was an early DigiPaint feature that then got printed back to film with print to film technology that was in its infancy, and that film is all we have.
Oh, so this is an upscale, kind of no matter how you do it, right?
Well, it's not really an upscale so much as there's like some weird kind of dimming and flickering effect. It's almost like they had shot the film off of a CRT monitor in places.
Wow, that's weird.
It still looks good, and it's full resolution, but yeah, there's a little bit of flicker here and there, and there's like the way some things are colored, it's a little off. But it looks as good as I think it's ever going to look, because none of those digital assets were archivable back then, because they were huge.
Well, I will temper my expectations, but I'm still...
I think it's a great disc. I'm looking forward to having a copy of it, but
yeah
it's not reference quality.
Yeah, I don't have it, so I just want it. And I want it in the highest possible quality. So, I mean, the only time... I've seen that movie... I've seen it on DVD once or twice. But when I saw it in the theater, it was the dirtiest film print I've ever seen. So, like, I have distinct memories of that being the filthiest film print I have ever seen. So, you know, this will be a step up from that anyway.
Yes, it will.
Let's see here. Maxed Out Max asks, obligatory opinions on the upcoming Dragon Ball Super. Are you hyped or indifferent?
I was never a Dragon Ball fan.
Yeah, we're both indifferent, right?
Yes.
I mean, from a business standpoint, great for Funimation. I'm glad they just, I'm sure they have secured their next, you know, cash cow for however long, provided it's good and provided the fans want it. And they certainly do based on the sales of those movies. You know, those new movies that Battle of Gods did really, really well for them, to the point where it had only been out for like a month or two, and it outsold everything else in Funimation's catalog for the year.
Damn.
Yeah, that was huge. So, new Dragon Ball, there's a huge thirst for it. Good for them, but I don't care. I'm not a fan. Well, it's not that I'm not a fan. I've never attempted it. I've seen like a few episodes of Dragon Ball. It was kind of boring.
You know, that was my experience exactly. I saw it when I was a kid, a few episodes here and there, and I'm like, eh, this isn't grabbing me. And if it didn't grab me when I was a kid, it sure as hell is not going to grab me when I'm 35.
Right. Yeah. Definitely not. It's like professional wrestling. If you didn't get into it when you were a teenager or younger, it's not going to happen now.
Right. Or the Goonies.
Yeah. Or the Goonies. Exactly. The Goonies. Lawrence Brenner asks, what are some of the biggest problems in the anime and manga licensing industry? Okay.
A show.
Yeah, that's a show, I guess, in and of itself. I mean, the biggest problems with licensing titles, I mean, I don't know, you have to bid.
Right now, it's like we're in about another bidding bubble, so prices for a lot of stuff is insanely high.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest problem.
Right, yeah, it seems like there's a little bit of an arms race going on. Maybe not a little bit. Maybe there's a big arms race going on. And I, you know, we'll see how it fleshes out, but I mean, in terms of like problems with licensing, I don't know. I guess I don't really understand the question.
It's very, very broad and non-specific, and I think intentionally so, and we can't really answer something that broad.
Yeah. Okay. Rainy Isle asks, have either of you seen Sofia Coppola's The Bling Ring? And if so, what are your thoughts on it? Kind of out of nowhere.
The Bling Ring, really?
Yeah, did you ever see that?
No.
Yeah. Okay, well, you don't like Sofia Coppola, right?
I hate Sofia Coppola.
Okay, see, I love Sofia Coppola.
Really?
And, yeah, I love Sofia Coppola. Oh. Love it.
I think I knew that, but I forgot.
I really love Marie Antoinette, and Lost in Translation is okay. That movie's pretty racist.
It's very racist.
Yeah. I still think it's kind of well made.
She is a good director, don't get me wrong. I just can't stand her subject matter, and she keeps going back to the same well.
It's navel-gazing.
Poor little rich girl.
Yes, which is why Marie Antoinette was like the perfect movie for her to make. And that movie, I think that movie is beautiful, and it's not, like, I acknowledge her movies are really boring, and they're the kind of wallow movies that you don't like.
If I'm going to wallow in someone's misery, I at least want to have some respect for the character.
The thing is, it's not misery. They're not wallowing in misery.
That's ennui.
Yeah, like, Lost Translation is ennui. Marie Antoinette is wallowing in, there's a vague sense that she's trapped in there, but largely you're just kind of hanging out in Versailles. And there's pop music, and yeah, no, I don't know. I like her stuff. I like the way it looks. I like the way it's paced. The movie she made called Somewhere is self-parody, and it's hilarious if you're familiar with her movies. I don't recommend anyone watch it. But if
isn't that the one that takes place entirely in Chateau Marmont?
Yeah, it's just Kiefer Sutherland, just doing nothing for an hour and a half. He does nothing. He puts out cigarettes in the swimming pool. That's it. It is a parody of a Sofia Coppola film.
What you describe, I already just want to hang myself.
Yeah, The Bling Ring is actually her weakest movie. It wasn't very good. They should have gotten, that was an interesting story, and they should have gotten someone who wasn't her to write it, to make it, I think. It wasn't particularly good. It was kind of a boring, drab treatment of an otherwise very interesting story. All right, back on topic. Braves133 asked, what are your thoughts on Ghost in the Shell Arise, either the OVA or the TV broadcast, and the upcoming movie? So, I don't know about you. I am kind of over Ghost in the Shell.
I am too. The only Ghost in the Shell anything I liked was... the only Ghost in the Shell anything I loved was their first Oshii movie.
Yeah.
And then I liked, to varying degrees, Innocence and Standalone Complex.
Right.
And then by the time Standalone Complex second gig came out, I was just like, okay, attention waning, still going to buy the discs, I'll get to them someday, never actually did. And now I'm, everything I'm hearing about Arise just seems like no one's all that into it.
No, and it's like a prequel, and it's Toa Ubukata, who we have an enormous interview with that's going up pretty soon, so look out for that. I don't know. You know, I never found Ghost in the Shell that compelling. Like, I never thought it was that exciting. People treated Ghost in the Shell like it was the most incredible thing, and I never thought it was all that interesting.
Well, the core concept of it and the original work was not. The manga is a slog.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, Masamune Shirō, he got some really great anime adaptations in the 90s. He must have had some amazing agents, because he got some really great work made out of his not that great work.
He got some really great work that Ghost in the Shell is turn of the century cyber fetishism. Like, that's what it is.
Right.
And it belongs in the pile with the Matrix and Hackers and, you know, I'm just putting all these movies together from a thematic point of view. Like, there was a lot of that stuff in the mid to late to the early 2000s.
Johnny Mnemonic.
You know, there's a lot of that stuff. It's neat to go back and look at it, but it's like Ghost in the Shell is the original. I don't find it particularly compelling now. Like, it's okay. It's a pretty good action movie in spots, but it's very thinky about the future that we live in. So I don't know. It's okay. I guess what I'm saying is, like, my personal reaction to Ghost in the Shell as a franchise, even the original film, is kind of like, yeah, it's all right. But the hype around it, and it's treated like it's the world's biggest thing, I just don't get. I don't get the fascination with it. Like, it's okay.
I just like the Oshii of it, frankly.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and you know, I think Innocence is a really fascinating movie. Like, that's a really interesting movie. From like a, if you step back, like if you look at it like academically, like it's a really interesting film.
Sure.
And it's gorgeous too. But beyond that, like the TV show felt like samey stuff, good music, but that's kind of it. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm probably not going to watch Arise. I just don't care. Whatever that movie is, unless it's like a proper, like, third movie and not, well, you need to have watched 50 episodes of the TV show and these 6 OVAs in order to know what's happening in this movie. Nah, man. Nah, forget it. I'm not interested.
Like, yeah.
I don't got time for that. Ghost in the Shell puts me to sleep. It's boring. Not exclusively. Like, I don't hate it. Anyway. All right. Land of Obscution asks, Daisuke announced plans last month to expand from 22 series streaming to 500 over 10,000 episodes. Do you think they can deliver? I think the more adequate question is anyone watching Daisuke?
They have new blood behind it.
Really?
It changed hands in Japan. Now the industry as a whole is taking putting a little more muscle behind it and a little more initiative. I think they see it as, you know, there's no reason that they couldn't become their own Crunchyroll. And
that's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Not have to split the proceeds with a Crunchyroll.
Right. So this is Aniplex. This is Daisuke is the Aniplex of America of streaming services.
Well, yes. The problem is that you can't really get that much better quality than what Crunchyroll already does.
Right.
And do a simulcast. I mean, yes, we can quibble about their translation quality here and there, but aside from that, they, on the face of it, they do a fine job at what they do.
Well, in order for them to actually do, like, be like, okay, you guys have to watch this on... They would have to basically say, okay, we're not licensing any of this to anyone, and it's just going to be on Daisuke. Which, I'm sure they don't want to leave all that money on the table.
Well, also, they have huge problems because, frankly, Japan just does not have it together when it comes to device support.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. They're kind of behind on that stuff.
They do have... They have an OK iPad app. They don't have, they're not on any set-top boxes.
Right.
You know, they gotta, they really gotta step that up a little bit if they want to be taken seriously. I mean, when Funimation is doing better than you, you're way behind.
I think Funimation's player is much better than it used to be.
It is. It has improved by leaps and bounds. I'm still struggling with it here and there.
Yeah, there's some problems. Like, I always have to reload it before it'll start playing.
Yeah.
And the bottom sometimes glitches out. Like, it's not great, but it. I think that the... I kind of feel like the complaints about it are maybe a little over... I don't know.
Well, outdated. Oversold.
Yeah.
They have improved quite a bit, but, you know, they're still... Frankly, they're still way behind. And, you know, Daisuke is way far behind them. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see like how serious they are, because in order for them to get serious about competition, they can't really do like half measures and like maybes and like, well, we're going to have more stuff. Like, if they want to get serious about competition, that market is spoken for. Crunchyroll basically owns it. Funimation is now trying to like take a big chunk out of Crunchyroll. There's probably not room for a third player in that market. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, Crunchyroll hasn't even done all that well with catalog stuff. You know, when you're talking 500 shows, that means to me catalog, back catalog.
Right.
And even Crunchyroll hasn't done very well with them. The only place where that has done well is Hulu.
Was that a curation problem?
I think it's a discovery problem.
Right.
I think the people who are gonzo enough to go directly to a, frankly, obscure website to watch anime on a PC... are the people who are following every simulcast, and that's taking all their every waking moment of that they're watching anime. The space for catalog to grow is with the casuals, and they discover that on places like Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah, right. So the people using Daisuke right now are using it because that's the only place you can watch Cinderella Girls, but otherwise they're using their preferred service.
Well, unless you're already... so knee-deep in anime that you're probably reading ANN every other day, at least. You right. Probably don't even know Daisuke exists.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Because the exclusive they have is for super mega hardcores. You know, it's Idolmaster. That's their exclusive.
Well, not only that, I mean...
And Kuroko's basketball, yeah.
You know, there's no marketing. How would a casual even know... you even be made aware of Daisuke and what they offer?
I don't know. There's no ads.
No. I mean, they do run... skins and banners on ANN occasionally, but that's, you know, that only goes so far.
Right.
Casuals don't go to, you know, they go to ANN every once in a while. Well, casuals are more likely to go to Crunchyroll.
I mean, I just want to say, I like to think that a banner ad on Anime News Network really gets you the attention you need in this industry, Justin. I mean, this is a completely unbiased opinion.
Well, look, an ad on ANN will absolutely get you the rapt attention of the sort of fans that go to ANN.
Right.
There are a lot of different kinds of fans.
Yeah. No, you're right. We just ran a survey. I now know exactly the kind of fan that goes to ANN.
Yep.
And have for a while.
And I'll bet it looks very different than your stereotypical Crunchyroll user, and yeah, very different from your stereotypical Funimation.com user.
Yeah, it's ANN's user base is definitely a touch older, and into not necessarily obsessed with Naruto. That's kind of the difference. They're not 14 and Naruto fanatics.
Right.
That's sort of it. but anyway, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I personally, like, you know, the Me Too stuff, like, oh, look, you know, here's a market that looks like it has money in it. I've got some capital. Let's do something in this market. The Me Too-ism just doesn't really seem like it's a great way to go these days. I don't know. That market seems like it's being served. If their intention is to become, like, the place for catalog, okay. I mean, is that a winning business plan in this day and age?
Not without solving that discovery problem, and that's a huge problem.
Yeah,
because it's very expensive to reach casuals.
Yep, sure is. Got to advertise on ESPN. Okay, let's see here. Braves 133 asks: any non superhero movies you're looking forward to this summer? Well, I mentioned Mad Max and Inside Out. Yeah, there's stuff. I really want to see Jurassic World. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but my expectations, I'm just going to keep them low. And maybe it's good. I don't know.
Justin, I'll wait for the reviews on that.
What?
I'll wait for the reviews on that one.
I will see it no matter what. I don't know. That's one of those, like, you know, childhood teddy bear franchises where my memories of the original are so fond that if they put Jurassic Park on something, I'll probably watch it. Even if it sucks, I'll probably watch it. I'll admit it's bad, but I'll still watch it. And I know you're really excited for the Entourage movie, right?
Absolutely.
You just can't wait.
Cannot wait.
Magic Mike, XXL.
That'll probably go, too.
That's not Soderbergh, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Of course it isn't. What am I saying? Let's see.
Did he retire or didn't he?
Yeah, he's doing... You know, I bet we probably will see another movie from him at some point, but maybe he's sort of like semi-retired?
Yeah, I thought he was just doing TV now.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay, that. I do want to see Tomorrowland. Yeah, no, there's stuff. It's not all sequels. Mostly sequels, but not entirely.
I kind of want to see Terminator Genesis. Really? Yeah, it looks terrible, but I kind of want to see it.
Do you like those movies, like, in general? Like, have you seen them all?
I skipped 3.
Rise of the Machines?
Yeah.
With the Lady Terminator?
Yeah, I just, no. But I don't know. If it in any way harkens back to its kind of schlocky 80s origins, I'm there.
Yeah, if that's what they're doing, sure. But I thought that last one was just the worst. Like, just the pits.
Yeah.
Like, ugly and boring, and frankly, like, just the universe of the Terminator, I have just never been that interested in it. I've always thought it was pretty threadbare.
It is threadbare, but I don't know. There's a viscera I attach to it. Maybe it's just because I was the right age when 2 came out.
Yeah, sure, right. Yeah, you're about 12.
Yeah.
So, 11, 12. So, yeah, that which is about the age. And even though that movie was rated R, every kid saw it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my dad made the special exception for me.
Yeah. Mine too, yeah. It was like, all right, this is rated R. But there's no boobs in it, so, you know, it's okay to watch all this horrible violence. I just saw that again recently, and for the first time in, like, I don't know, 15 years. It's all right. You know, you could see
I can't imagine it aged well.
No, it's not bad. It's James Cameron. You know, his movies age pretty well.
That's true.
It's, you know, it doesn't look bad or anything. It's just kind of long, and it's a little slow in parts. But you can see how it was such an enormous hit, like, totally. And then, but after that, the third one was bad. The fourth one I thought was bad. And I'm just not that interested in the story. So that's, of the sequels that are coming out this summer, actually, I think maybe that's the one I'm the least interested in. Ted 2 notwithstanding.
Oh, here we go. I am really looking forward to seeing When Marnie Was There.
Oh, yeah, right. That's, that opens...
Surprising no one.
That opens pretty soon, right?
Yeah, end of May. Right. So we have like 3 weeks, or 4 weeks.
Yeah, curious to see what that's like. I've read plenty of reviews of it, but, you know.
I've intentionally not, because I know it'll just be... I'm expecting it to be the quality of Arrietty.
Really? I'm hoping it's a little bit better than that.
I do, too, but that's how I'm tempering my expectations.
All right, this is a good question. OP Gourmet Hunter, asks, if animators get paid so low in Japan, who gets all the money an anime makes?
Well, A, it's not really that much, and B, right. The producers and the director, the scenario writer, the head scenario writer, and the original creator all get a cut.
Are they profit participants?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, revenue participants.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And also, if they had to license a pop song and not create one for the opening and or ending, that gets percentage also. That goes to the record label. Rest mostly goes to the production committee. They first recoup whatever they put into the show. And then, you know, it's split between the maker company or the whoever made the product and the rest of the production committee.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is this is a slim margin product that's designed to sell other things.
Right. The anime itself is not usually a huge revenue driver. There are major exceptions, but the rule is that, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're probably actually going to lose money on it.
Yeah. I mean, well, even when you have an enormous success, you still look at the multiplier for merchandise.
Yeah.
So, like, take an example, like, something that's wildly successful, like Cars. So those movies make plenty of money at the box office. But if you look at the merchandise sales, it's something like $7 or $8 billion just on that alone. So right.
Now it, cut that by, you know, 10,000 and you get anime.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. But imagine, like, Madoka Magica probably made Gennaro Ibuchi a very wealthy man, like, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, knowing that, you know, I didn't know they were profit participants. That's a pretty good deal if you get a hit.
Well, yeah, that explains why Kunihiko Yuyama has spent, you know, 15 years of his life doing Pokemon, right?
Right. You're right. Because he wants those fat stacks. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Scotty415 asks, how are you guys liking the final season of Mad Men? What are your hopes for the ending?
It was kind of... I wasn't all that happy until the last episode, and now I'm happy again.
Really? I was pretty okay with it. I was sort of like, where are they going with this? But then, the show is now asking these enormous existential questions.
Right.
I think the show is trying to ask, what's the fucking point?
That seems to be the thread, yes.
Yeah, and it's getting... Yeah, it's really interesting now. I was on board. I thought it was kind of weird because the show seemed to go back to a kind of a strange status quo at the beginning of the season.
Right.
Like the last season never happened or something. Things seemed to be back totally normal. And I was like, wow, what's going on? But, you know, then it started opening up. Frankly, the AV Club reviews are helping me out. Helping me puzzle that show out this season more so than usual, because it is being much more obtuse and ephemeral and difficult to grasp than normal, which is, you know, that's saying quite a bit for Mad Men, which is normally fairly obtuse.
Right.
But no, I think it's really good. I have to, I totally admit, I really, really hope there is a flash forward at the end and we see all these people old. I want to see old Peggy and old Pete and old Don. I want to see them like senior citizens.
Oh, how many of them are actually going to get to old age?
Well, okay.
80% of them are going to die in their early 60s.
Right, yeah, because of the alcoholism.
And the chain smoking.
Yeah, right.
And...
Actually, I think the chain smoking may be worse, but yeah, like... sure, but still, I want to see, like, you know, their senior years, like, however old they get. I want to see that. But I think I kind of know maybe where it's going, and yeah, I'm on board. Like, I think if they stick the landing, it'll be, you know, maybe the second or maybe the best TV show. I don't know. I really love that show.
Yeah, it's drawing to a natural conclusion that I won't be too broken up when it's over, but I'm going to be really unhappy that it's over.
Yeah. Well, you know, all the good stuff is kind of going away right now.
It really is. Everything is just kind of turned into kind of franchisey meh.
Well, it's not so much franchisey meh. It's just like we went through a real renaissance there with television and everything's just kind of ending. And, you know, whether or not you're... whether or not there's anything new to replace it, and you're right about, like, genre stuff is kind of replacing what we had.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really that into the genre stuff.
I'm not either. And also, you know, a lot of the stuff that people are holding up is like, yay, this is making me so happy. Like, can I just say, I do not get the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah. I like it more than you, obviously, but it definitely loses steam.
I couldn't get through the season.
Really? You
like,
dropped it?
It was starting to get painful, and like it was just I asked myself almost every episode, why am I watching this?
Really? Really? Because yeah. It's very 30 Rock. It's just darker than 30 Rock is.
Oh, no, it's not. It's like the main character is so chirpy, you just want an anvil to fall on her.
Oh, I like that actress. I think she's funny.
Well, I think she can be funny, but it's just – it's not – I don't think it's dark enough.
Really? Really? You don't think it's dark enough?
No.
Jesus. That show gets really it's got some black hole moments in it. Like I don't know. I think
that show needs to be fucking Roadrunner.
I guess. I don't know. I like it more than you, but it definitely runs out of steam. But then again, this was the season that was produced for NBC.
So. Right, that's true. Maybe they'll go a little more hog wild in the next one.
Well, I think that obviously has to happen because it won't be produced with any of those restrictions. So they're not trying to impress NBC, which kind of doesn't make any sense to me that they were doing that in the first place, because while 30 Rock was a critical success and got a lot of Emmys, it was never a ratings hit. Like, they kept that on the air because I assume they had a really good relationship with Lorne Michaels and, of course, don't want to piss him off. So that show almost canceled, like, a lot.
True, but also now almost everything is doing those numbers.
Yeah.
So they would be or less.
Right.
So if they could get back to first season of 30 Rock numbers, I think they'd be pretty happy. They'd consider that a win.
Right. Well, sure. But I guess my point was I didn't understand why they were trying to sell something that is a whole lot like 30 Rock to the station that barely succeeded with 30 Rock.
Right.
But I don't know. All right. Hazukari asks, what is the one anime you would like to forget so you could experience seeing it again for the first time? Seeing it for the first time again.
I'd probably go... Actually, I think I'd go for first Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, maybe. I think I would go with just, like, you know, Princess Mononoke or Red Line or something like that.
First FMA really hit my emotional buttons in a way that very few other series did.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched O3 in a long time. And after doing Brotherhood, I kind of, like... don't want anything to do with Full Metal Alchemist for a long time. Like,
yeah, I don't blame you.
I'm just over it. Like, I don't want to talk about Full Metal Alchemist or read about Full Metal. Like, I'm just, you know, you get seriously burned out on a franchise, and I'm burned out on Full Metal Alchemist. So it's not the first thing that comes to mind, but yeah, it would probably be just like a movie that really meant a lot to me, like Princess Mononoke or the Utena movie, certainly something like that. Let's see here. Waffity Waff asks, what small nuisances of life do you both think are ignored and then end up snowballing as time goes by?
I'd say eating and getting fat.
Yeah, well, so that dovetails into a question we got, because obviously this is sort of an off-topic show. We've been a little on topic, but a lot of off-topic stuff. But we did get a question from somebody, for you specifically. He's trying to lose weight. He's 27. This was an email.
Oh, that age.
He says he's been... Yeah, 27 is kind of like your metabolism is starting to die, right?
Yeah.
So he says he's jogging every day already, so it's not an exercise question, but he's asking about diet and if you have any tips specifically for dealing with cravings.
So just
in case people don't know, you went through a personal physical transformation in the last couple of years and have done, like, are a fitness dude now, like you're a fitness guy.
Yeah, what can I say? LA got me good.
Yeah, so that's why people send you these sorts of questions, just in case anyone listening doesn't know that.
Yeah. Look, I struggle with it, and it's still something I struggle with. And, you know, as everyone knows, not only am I as much of a fitness guy as I am now, I'm also a giant food otaku.
Right.
Like, obsessively. But... you know, if you really work at it, you can slowly manipulate what you find good. Like, now if someone offered me, okay, here's a whole Little Caesars pizza, but you have to eat the whole thing, I'd walk away.
Right.
I don't think I would have done that 5 years ago.
Wow.
Actually, I know I wouldn't have done that. I would be like, you have to. So the cravings, to answer the question, cravings are hard. Basically... you have to allow yourself a cheat. One mistake I made early on was just completely cutting myself off from carbs, completely cutting myself off from dairy, completely cutting myself off from sugar, and you go crazy.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Sugar in particular is really bad. You go through sugar withdrawal, it's like quitting smoking.
Holy shit.
It's that bad. Like, you're irritable, you're crabby. Like, a whole bunch of us at the gym did it at once, and the girls were like, I can't stop PMSing. The guys are like, I'm having mood swings. What the hell?
Right.
And it went on for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, like, people's skin was breaking out. It, like, sugar is really freaking addictive.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to allow yourself a cheat. Here's the thing, you can't just light your diet on fire on your cheat day. You have to go, okay, well, I'll have a cupcake. Okay, I'll have a little tiny sliver of pie.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do now. If I'm having those cravings, which I do, seriously, I'll have a little bite of it, and then if it's a hunger thing, if it's not just, oh, that sounds really good, if it's like, shit, I need to eat, but I'm really craving, like, pizza or something, it's a bite or two, and then a salad or something healthy. But right. I get the craving out by just tasting it, and then I'm fine.
You crave sugar, you get some fruit, you know.
Yeah,
you,
right, yeah.
And water helps a lot, too, but it's tough, and, you know, it never stops being tough. But, you know, it's about building discipline within yourself, and, you know, that helps everything.
Yeah, you're kind of training yourself. It's hard.
It's like, it's the equivalent of putting yourself through the army when there's no one standing over you screaming at you.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. You got to do it, like, you have to discipline yourself. Like, that's, because, you know, there's, even if you're, like, married, if you're, like, out on your own doing the grocery shopping or something, you could stop and get a snack. No one will know, you know?
Oh, well, okay, first of all, I think it's fucking insidious that they put a actually somewhat decent, if you're in the right mood, pizza place right at Costco.
Costco pizza. A lot of people's Achilles heel is Costco pizza.
I have fallen prey to that so many times.
It's just evil. That's funny. Yeah, I don't know, man. That shit is hard. I obviously haven't figured it out. You've figured it out. I'm still struggling with it, but yeah.
It's hard, man. And you have to find a balance of what's right for you. And Das ist mein Kampf.
Right. Okay, so let's go ahead and wrap up with this. People often talk about the average. This is from Ask.fm, so thanks to whoever sent this in, but I thought it would be better on the podcast. People often talk about the average lifespan of an anime fan being around 2 years before they get bored and perhaps move on to some other interest. Were there ever times... Yeah, that's the average. That's, you know, it's something people are into when they're a teenager or college, or when they get older, they get into it, they're into it for 2 years, and then they move on.
What's wrong with us?
Well, I mean, you know, you want to ask, like, the average length of being into something that's a hobby. Like, anime is, you know, a lot of it is made aimed at a teenage audience. It gets a lot of teenagers into it. Teenagers do not have the longest attention span. They don't get dedicated to something. So, you know, I would imagine, like, if you were really into, I don't know, building model cars when you were a kid or a teenager, would you still really be into it? You know, actively into it, looking and seeing what the new car models are and going to the store and buying them? Like, probably not, right?
Right, that's true.
So, you know, I just see it as like, well, that's how long people last in really any given hobby. Anyway, the question was, were there ever times where you felt yourself drifting away from it, or was there a point where you knew pretty much this was more than just a hobby? So I will just say that I was just a fan for, I mean, I'm still just a fan, but I work with anime professionally. I was only ever not working with anime for about 2 years. I turned this into a job so fast, it makes my head spin sometimes. I just didn't spend that much time as a fan, as just a fan, to the point where I don't remember what it's like. So I kind of can't answer this question. I don't remember a time when it was just this, like, whatever thing. It's been my job for so long that's what it is to me. So, I don't know. I love it. I can still consider myself a big fan, but I cannot separate hobby and job when it comes to anime. I really can't do it. And I don't think that's unreasonable for someone in my position.
I'm the same way, if not worse.
Right.
I mean, I got into anime when I was 13, and I was the kind of kid that, you know, I was into music. So I read a lot about record labels.
Right.
You know, and, you know, could name every record label I'd seen, and, you know, recognize their logos. You know, everything was always like, oh, I'm into this. I want to know the industry behind it. And, you know, when you're that age, everything becomes a job possibility. Anime I just kind of glommed onto, like I did everything else, but there was a lot left to do at that stage of fandom. It was not very well organized at that point, so there were lots of opportunities to get involved, and so I did, and it just became a rabbit hole, and, you know, here I am.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to say that this is not intended to be some kind of like, oh man, I just don't appreciate anime like I used to. No, I have a very sincere appreciation for it. I consider myself a fan, like I said. It's just, it's really hard to explain. You certainly can empathize with this. It is really hard to articulate the feelings you go through when you turn your hobby into your job. It's tough to articulate it.
I imagine it's like being a parent of a teenager.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I have no idea.
I'm just guessing here. I'm being silly, obviously, but
right.
I mean, there are some times where you're just like, I can't deal with this anymore. And you wish you could just walk away and you can't. And then you start resenting it. But then there are other times where you get to work on something really, really, really amazing. Like I just went through this with Castle Cagliostro, where, you know, after the craziness of that project was over, I sat back and went, holy crap, I just worked on a Miyazaki movie. I didn't think that was ever going to happen.
Yeah, you have moments of moments like that. I guess, like, you know, for the person asking the question and anyone, you know, curious about this, how do you feel about your job? Well, take those feelings and apply them to your hobby, and then remain a fan of the thing while applying your feelings about your job to it. And you tell me how emotionally complicated that is. It's complicated, I think. I think it's tough to sum it up. It's not simple black and white. Are you a fan or aren't you? You know, it's not that simple. It's never going to be that simple for me. So I guess it's a tough question for me to ask. When I feel burned out, I just take a break from watching anime for a little while and I focus on other projects. I go whole hog into just editorial management. I take a little bit of a break from watching stuff. But frequently, you know, the frustrating parts of the job are not the content. You know, it's, oh, I have 15 interviews over the next 2 weeks that I have to manage. That's frustrating and hard and difficult. But those are job feelings. You know, I don't know. It's tough. Like I said, it's very complicated feelings. People who work with video games, who grew up with video games, I imagine they feel the same way about it. You know, people who run anime licensing, you know, people who work at Region 1 anime companies who came up as fans probably feel the same way about this stuff, that they have a very emotionally complex relationship with this stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's tough to articulate.
At least we're not in marketing where we have to feign enthusiasm for shows we actively hate.
I relish the fact that I'm in a position where I get to be honest about my feelings. And there are a lot of people with jobs out there where they're not allowed to be honest about how they feel.
That is a luxury.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't vent about the shows I'm working on that I hate.
Right.
I'm not in that position anymore.
No, yeah, no, absolutely not. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a complicated one. But anyway, so I hope we sort of answered that, kind of. But that actually wraps us up. Thanks a lot, Justin, for hanging out.
It was fun.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks to Justin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.